You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Visit bpn.fm to discover more.
Welcome to Half Hour with Jeff and Richie, the podcast where we explore the latest shows we see, sharing our insights and opinions on the performances, storylines, and everything in between.
In today's episode, we'll be discussing the new Broadway musical, Lempicka. Whether you cannot catch the show in person or you want to expand your thoughts after seeing it, this episode is for you.
And as always, we want to inform you that this episode will contain spoilers. So if you're ready to dive into this production, stick around with us. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie. We're thrilled to be your host for today's episode. So let's start this conversation about Lempicka on Broadway.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Half Hour.
Welcome everyone to a new episode of Half Hour with Jeff and Richie. Today we're talking about the new Broadway musical Lempicka.
Lempicka is the sweeping new Broadway musical about the life of artist Tamara de Lempicka. Amidst the violence of the Russian Revolution, a young painter named Tamara de Lempicka and her aristocrat husband are forced to abandon their luxurious lifestyle and flee to the dubious safety of Paris. Relying on her raw talent and relentless ambition, Tamara claws her way from penniless refugee to in-demand portraitist, earning a place among Parisian high society. Her world is upended once again when she meets Raffaella, a free spirit from the city's slums, who introduces Tamara to a new world of decadence and passion. Torn between her new muse and her husband, fighting to leave her mark on an ever-changing world, Tamara must discover the depths of her own strength to survive.
Okay, so as always, let's start with our bold statement about the piece and see how that unfolds into our conversation.
Okay, let's do it.
I'm going to go bold statement today first. And with my bold statement, I'm going to say that a portion of Tamara de Lempicka's life or solid theme around painting really, really needed to take ownership in this musical. And I'm not quite sure that it did that.
Interesting. I'm going to go a little more of a broad statement with my statement here and say that I feel as if Lempicka was a great idea for a musical and in some ways was really strong and then in other ways had some weaker moments. And so to me, I found overall this to be a little inconsistent in general. Mm-hmm. And I want to dive into that a little bit more here.
Right, because I fully agree with this. I think that it was extremely inconsistent and at times slightly messy, so which is kind of shocking for me because I was really intrigued by this musical and I had high hopes for it.
Well, let's talk about this just concept in general and the plot in general. We're talking about someone's life, and a lot of times here on the podcast, I'll say I love when they focused on this person's life at this specific time in their life. Mm-hmm. But this was a like, let's tell her full life story kind of sort of, which we've seen before. Evita. I mean, I don't want to keep comparing this to Evita, but there's a lot of similarities to it. And I think that in some ways we really got to know her. And then in some ways there was like, whoa, 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 where are we now? There was a little bit of lost plot holes. And I know you can't tell everyone's full life in a full 2.5 hours, but I just thought that what was strong in this show was strong and what was weak was weak. So I'm not sitting here like I have said about some shows this season and saying, it was okay. I'm not kind of sitting here and saying that because a meh, it's okay was, no, it's fully fleshed out. I just didn't like some of it. I think I'm sitting here saying, why do I feel like I'm still seeing something that's a work in progress, even when it had an out-of-town tryout? We saw this in previews, but kind of towards later previews. We didn't see it in the very beginning of previews. I know there were some things added and shifted and changed throughout mm-hmm. previews. I don't really know. I'm also sitting here saying I think Act Two works so much better than Act One. And we I've heard that from a few people, and there's something about the flow of Act Two that seems so nice, and I'm with it the whole time, and the plot is moving. But it took us a really long time to get somewhere in Act One for me. Right. So from a plot perspective of where we are. Also, one more thing I'll say is the beginning starts with her in her elder years in the 70s, and it looks like she's in California. And then it ends with her being back in her elder years again in California. But we never saw her get to America and get to California. So if you're going to start and end in California, fine. Do you want to maybe give us a heads up as to how we went from Russia to Paris and then now we're in California? That was like a big plot point that not necessarily extremely important to her life, but she did get to America and end her life in America. So I'm just trying to figure out how we got to showing her on a bench outside in California when we didn't talk about the journey there. That's one of the few things that I wanted to say about overall bookending this with the California bit, you know?
Okay. So kind of talking about this plot a little bit more in depth than what you're talking about as well, it's very easy to go Wikipedia this woman's life, correct?
Sure.
Anyone's life. So a big topic that I wanted to talk about here is, if we're trying to tell a legit story around Tamara de Lempicka's life, why are we missing certain aspects of her life and skipping over things as well as including different storylines that maybe weren't necessarily there? So
for example,
the bar owner, it is known, this is a Wikipedia thing, it is known that she had a relationship with the bar owner. I don't know if we really had that same effect that she had a relationship with the bar owner in this musical. And did we need to know that? It's more of like a question on, it is known that she is bisexual and it is known that she has had many lovers in her life. But we really focused on her first husband. Then we focused on her love interest, the female love interest played by Amber Amon.
Rafaela.
And then we have the second husband later, who is the rich people that buy all of her paintings. And then she becomes the husband. I don't know. It just seemed like very inconsistent. And why are we trying to not really focus on it?
And then it's interesting because I feel like with these inconsistencies, there was a lot of let's throw loud music in. Let's throw this amazing set in, which I will say loved the set. I really did love this set. We're going to talk about some of the specific things. Right. Costumes I liked, some of the songs I really liked. I actually like this score better than some of the other scores I'm hearing right now.
But first and foremost, but just the book. Is the book working or is the book messy?
The book is sometimes working. I truly felt like at times I was like, oh, this is cool. The plot's moving. The music is accelerating. But for me, Act One seemed to take us a really long time to get from Russia to Paris to get her life started. There was so much focus on that. So, and then Act Two is like, now we're moving. And then we jumped to this. So the book is kind of working. I don't think it's bad. I've seen worse plot movement in book. I just think there's some loopholes that could have been tightened up and cleaned up a little bit in the book overall.
Where I'm kind of coming across here on it being messy, though, is when you look at something like this, you have to say to yourself, are we supposed to learn something, number one? Or number two, is this just supposed to be a legacy piece and like a reflection piece on this woman's life and how we remember her? Or three, is it just pure entertainment? And I think, unfortunately, with this book, it was trying to do a little of all three and not really focusing on what it should have been. Because if it was pure entertainment, I understand where the music is coming in. I understand where the lighting and design and the choreography is coming in. And that's great. But I think that there was too much here about it being a legacy piece and who lives to tell this woman's story, which it fell flat there because there was moments where I was like, I don't know if I really care about her life.
Sometimes there was a little bit of that. There was also some interesting just choices of moving us through different locales. And that'll come down to a little bit of some of the direction if we're transitioning a little bit now into some direction, to some design.
Yeah, I'm totally happy to move into the direction
I feel like, listen, putting a diagonal platform on a track and pushing it on and off and on and off and on and off, changing the furniture every single interior scene, when you have this beautiful set behind you that's like sometimes used by the ensemble at most, I don't understand the put the scene front and center. Put different scenes at different, you know, I don't need full scenery. Put furniture out. I actually did like the empty frames in the museum. I didn't think we needed artwork there. Let us use your imagination as to what that worked. I'm talking about the interior studio scenes, the interior apartment scenes. There was so much of the up. I think by the eighth time, I was like, here comes that platform on again. And I'm like, I don't think the direction of this really worked for me. It seemed very stiff and everything's downstage center. When you see a show, Jeff, and 9 out of 10 small, intimate dialogue scenes are down front and center, when you have this huge, beautiful stage, pull something down right, pull something down left. Why does everything have to be down center all the time? I just don't get that from a director's standpoint.
This is one of those shows where, touching on what you're saying, I really feel as if there wasn't enough cohesive moments between the four big things here, which is the directing, the scenic design, the choreography, and the lighting. Sometimes I felt like I was watching four different people doing something up on that stage.
Yes.
And starting with Rachel's direction.
We'll be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Saks.com. At Saks.com, it's easy to find your new vibe. Dive into the Western trend with gold cowboy boots from Staud, or go full 90s throwback with platforms from Prada. You can shop for everything on your agenda, whether it's a breezy Zimmermann dress for a garden party or a bright Chloe blazer for brunch. Find inspiration for your new vibe every day at Saks.com.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
Welcome back.
Yeah. Why is it moving down center every single time?
Also, it is so, it almost feels like, in a way, maybe the scenic designer and the costume designer and the lighting designer were on one half of the team, and then the other half of the team was the director choreographer. Because I did think at times the lighting set and costumes did kind of work in this like neo, like we're not going to be so literal, but we're going to be avant-garde, because some of the costumes reflected that, some of the scenery and lighting. So I was like, oh, the design as a whole is this kind of abstract kind of like, we know we're at the turn of the 20th century here in the early, but also we're going to be avant-garde with it. So that kind of worked for me.
But it kind of worked. I agree. But it didn't fully work, because I felt like everything was at like a 70%.
Yes. Yes. That's a great way to put it. And even the choreo, bringing people on and off, there was a lot of jolty choreo, like just abstract, that didn't seem to fulfill the plot. I will say there is one standout song, which is Women in Act Two. When they're in the nightclub and they're doing all that belting and dancing, it was just so like, oh, this is the art movement of Paris song that I've been waiting for in the nightclub, like the cabaret-esque moment. Yeah. And so that worked. And in terms of score, let's talk about score, though, as we're moving into some of this music. When you take a period piece and you don't have the music necessarily from that time period. So, for example, when you watch Evita, a lot of the music is the style of that. South American kind of style of music, sure, right? But then you see something
Argentina.
Like Argentinian, right? But then you also look at something like Hamilton, where all the music in Hamilton is not from 1776, so or in the style of music of 1776. So my question to you is like, well, that's my question to you is, did this need to have more 1920s, 1930s music? Like there was the one nightclub song or two, there was one in Act One, or was it okay that some of this was this rock anthem, belter pop kind of sound? Because I didn't mind it at times. That's why I'm so sitting here so stuck. Like there were moments I was like, oh, this is kind of a good song, but it's not 100% fitting the time period. Is that okay, is my question to you.
I think it is okay in certain parts. and where this missed the mark for me and how I would have liked to have seen it different was that if it was going to be a pop score, it needed to be a full pop score. And you needed to come up with the sound of this being a almost art pop sound rather than it be a little bit of synth pop over here. And then we're going to give you some ballads and maybe some period music, etc. The score is not cohesive for me. You can't be having all of these marching sound, pop sound songs, and then like, okay, number. And then we're going to have jazz. It doesn't feel right. Even like Amber Iman's song when she comes in first and it's this whole bohemian style music. Listen, it works on its own. I'm going to listen to the track. It doesn't work in the show. It felt so out of place. And you're like, what is happening? Why is this happening? Is it even... We're going to move into something now because I feel like this is really what we're getting into. And it's actually Eden's performance.
Well, let's talk about that. And we'll talk about other performances too.
Yes.
I understand that Eden is carrying this show. She truly is. And I actually think her acting through song is remarkable and wonderful. Yeah. And her relationships with some characters, meaning I think her and Amber Iman's relationship was nice. I'm not sure how I felt about her and her husband's relationship. I didn't really feel much there. I felt that she had a relationship with her art. And I think that Eden really carries the show from an acting perspective. From a vocal perspective, I'm going to say this in the most respectful way possible. I don't know how she lasts singing this score the way that she is 8 times a week for the next few months. I don't, from a health perspective, I don't know how, as a vocal coach, someone who is a vocal coach or her voice teacher or someone who's working with her outside of the theater, what are they telling her to keep her voice healthy? Because there is a lot of screamy belty going on for me, pitchy head voice to chest voice, mixed stuff happening that's a little off. And she's still finding it. I get it. Like, we're early on here. She's still trying to get her muscle memory on it. But I sat here saying, oh, why are you screaming? Please don't scream. Please stop screaming. You don't have to hit the notes like that all the time.
It's not even about like, please don't scream. Don't do this. Like, for your health, like, and your vocal cords, you should not be doing that. And I'm pretty sure everyone listening to it is like, oh no, Eden, please. Listen, Eden's my first Elphaba. I'm going to love this woman till the end of time.
Yeah,
I'm so happy and proud that she's originating this role on Broadway. She's giving so much to it, but I'm nervous that it's not going to land the Tony Award that, you know, she's ready for.
Right. And I just feel like from a vocal perspective, is it also partly on the writers of this who wrote something like that? You know, there's always, I always hear in the chatter of the industry, like, why did Christine in Phantom of the Opera have a matinee cover, right? Where every matinee, a different person went on for Christine, right? Or right. So the matinees. But then people will always say, like, why does Elphaba not have a matinee cover? Would you ever wonder that, like, why there's not a matinee cover every single week for Wednesdays and Saturdays for Elphaba? And why does the woman who plays Elphaba have to do it 2 times? When I look at this with Eden, I say, why does this role not have a matinee cover? There's no disrespect. I just think this is such a vocally demanding score. If you've written the score to be this demanding, but also, there is other people who maybe could be doing this 8 times a week from a vocal health perspective. No problem.
Listen, you can have someone like Jessica Vosk easily play this role. I'm just going to say it.
Totally.
Easily play this role. She can sing it every day, probably 8 times a week.
I remember they talked about Patty and Evita. Why was there not a matinee cover for Evita? I think maybe there was later on at some point, but Patty was able to do it. And Patty was young, and Patty did it 8 times a week and then won a Tony Award for it. So is this Eden's Tony Award nomination? Oh, yeah.
Surely.
And she's doing some amazing stuff that I think she'll still find her footing on.
I mean, she's on the stage the whole time. She is giving some great acting moments. One thing I would have loved to have seen different, I would have loved to see her sell me the fact that she loves something. And I don't know if I got that about anything. Was it painting that she loves? Was it her child that she loves? Was it Raffaella? Was it her husband? I just don't really ever feel like it came across that she actually loved anything.
There wasn't enough emotional scenes for me with her and her husband and her and her child for me to really care enough about her relationship with her family. And I cared more enough about her relationship with Amber Amon's character, Raffaella, and about her work with her painting. I thought the act one ending of her getting in the bed with Raffaella was beautiful. There were some nice moments. And let's talk about that. Amber Amon is a star. And that woman is really owning that role. Listen, and I am blown away by Amber Amon.
She's taking Raffaella and she is owning it. She's almost stealing the show away from Eden. And listen, she has a beautiful song in the show called Stay.
Yes, I believe so. Stay. Yep, in Act 2.
And I said, oh, I can't wait to listen to that. The song is beautifully written. And, you know, there are moments in the show, even like if we go to, is it the Marinetti?
Marinetti, yep. Mm-hmm.
His stuff, there are some powerful moments in there going to the war. And he is commanding the stage. He has great timing.
That's George Abood. Yeah, he's wonderful in this too. He was such a standout for me.
I mean, when I saw the preview clips of this on social media ahead of time, I said, oh, those are going to be the moments that I love in the show. And I did.
Yeah, yeah. I also feel like, I'm just going to say this because a star, I don't want to say star to be because I feel like she's already a star, but when you see what Natalie Joy Johnson is doing in her Act 2 number, did I not say, yes? Like, I her, because she was living, what a beautiful belt of voice she has.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, she was such a standout for me. And I'm glad they gave her a whole number in Act 2.
Right.
You know, I love that. Also.
Right. But when you have these three supporting characters really standing out, I mean, those are my Tony nomination nod looks at predictions there. Those three. And I'm sure Eden's going to get a Tony nomination as well. But those three can easily be in the running for a Tony nomination.
And then I look at something like Beth Level's character in this, and I say to myself, I'm one of the biggest Beth Level fans in the history of the world, because I still think when I was a little boy watching her do her Tony Award-winning performance as the chaperone in The Drowsy Chaperone, and I still think that was one of the funniest things I've ever seen. And I think Beth is such a star. It's unfortunate that her role is so small in this, because when I got to intermission, I said, where is Beth in this? Why is Beth doing this role? She's barely in it. She has an Act 2 song, which is gorgeous and very sad and wonderful. And it was the Beth moment that we were all waiting for. I hope it's big enough for her to get Tony nominated in this, because I just think Beth just gets Tony nominated in everything she does. I just feel like the role is just a little too small, and I wish I had like one more song from Beth in there, because I love her.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the industry. That's how it works, you know?
It really is. I also feel like when you look at parts of this, it's one of those musicals where you want this to do really well, right? And when something is not complete, why are we rushing to have this on Broadway?
Well, it does almost, as much as I'm sitting there watching some beautiful moments, I'm watching and I'm saying, why do I not feel like I'm watching one whole show? There's just some moments that feel out of place and not quite finished. And I almost wish it, like, I don't mean to sound detrimental here, but I almost wish it would like stop and just do a few more workshops and then come back. And I know obviously money and the way this industry works doesn't really work like that. I just wish that this was cleaned up a little bit more and maybe tightened a little bit more.
We're saying this because this is a time where musicals are on Broadway one day and off the next day in the snap of a finger. And I don't want to see that happen to this show, but it might happen based on people talking about the show, people getting the crowd to go see the show. And if people are not going to do that, especially the Broadway people that are seeing this show, which I hope they are, you know, I would be worried for it. We'll be right back.
Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and
What do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Let's jump back into things.
I will tell you that I've known quite a few people that have seen this now, and I have heard some people say, this is amazing, this is amazing, this is amazing. And I've heard some people say, oh, yikes, yikes, yikes. And both of those groups of people that I've known are theater people who see a lot of theater. So that's what I kind of love about the industry, is that the world goes round by what people think.
It really is, but that's why it's not just about, you know, the major New York Times or New York Post or whatever big publication is talking about the show. It's the real chatter. Look at a show like Days of Wine and Roses. I mean, some people loved it. It got a New York Times critics pick, and then the theater people hated it.
And it closed early.
And it closed.
But that's why I look at Limpika and I say, how do we look at something like this? And I mean, obviously it's all about selling tickets, getting the Tony nominations, getting the buzz. It's a new work, and I'm always going to support a new work, especially with a strong LGBTQ female lead original role.
Yeah,
like that's
I love it.
Like I love that.
I love that. And I'm going to show this right now. Okay. We're looking at this painting.
The playbill.
The playbill. But the painting is on the playbill.
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Olympica.
Yeah.
Did you feel that you were sold a piece of art in that show?
No, partially because we were only really seeing the art reflected on like the backdrops and the act curtains and stuff. But what are you trying to say exactly?
Your answer should have been, you were sold a piece of art at the end of that show. The show is the piece of art. And you said no.
Yeah.
So I look at that and I say, don't just throw these paintings down and bring them in at the end of the show. Poor choice. This should have been the whole thing, like Sunday in the Park with George. You're sold that painting at the end of the show.
Oh,
I'm sure every single person wants that painting when they're leaving that show. We were sold nothing. Don't take me to legit people here. I'm not saying like there's obviously you could buy a painting in the lobby if you want, if you want to. But I'm saying on stage, the art felt like an afterthought, especially how bizarre it is when the set is a piece of art. Where was the movement of this and the art coming to life within that set?
Yeah.
I'm being very critical on this, but you know, that's just how I feel. Because
I hear you.
I think there's a lot of amazing moments in it, but it just doesn't feel cohesive.
And it feels inconsistent because it's sometimes I'm like, whoa, yes. And sometimes I'm like, oh, what's happening? And then I was like, whoa, yes. Again, it's that ebb and flow roller coaster that it sometimes I'm on a good roller coaster with the show. This one just seems like I did think it saved itself a little bit more in act two. But act one was really took me a long time. But I will tell you something.
There was a really cool moment in act two when they're doing the whole like 15-minute long song and she's going bouncing back. I think that's almost how the whole piece should have been.
Yeah. I will say with the score, I will listen to this score.
Yeah, totally.
Because I think there's definitely some cool numbers that stand out on their own that I would totally listen to when the cast recording comes out. You know what I mean?
Totally. And like, I kind of wanted to touch just like on the final thoughts here in like our overall experience there and audience. One thing I kind of wanted to start reading the vibe in a space is, how is the audience receiving this show? And for you, because I have my opinion, how do you feel the audience was really taking to it?
I felt the audience was like there. They enjoyed it. There was no raving, but there wasn't any like hatred. I think it was just like a their audience. When we, you know, when we left the Who's Tommy, that audience was raving at the end. The show wasn't even over yet.
Yeah,
I think when you're at End Juliet, people are raving. I don't think that energy quite existed at this. And it was like, oh, this is nice. Let's stand up now and clap. Great job, everyone. Yeah. It was like just a their audience.
You know, it's at the Longacre Theater. It's in a decent spot. It's across the street from Hadestown. You know, it has that definite crowd that could be going from that theater to that theater right after each other. And I'm looking around, and we sat in two different seats because we sat in the front row of the balcony in one part, and then we moved to the back because I wanted the full look of the theater, right? The front part, I'm sitting here and the people around me, and I'm saying, okay, there's a couple tourists around me not getting the show at all. And then when we moved, we had some other, like, I could definitely tell there were theater people around us. Some girls were laughing. I think anytime a song kind of came on, kind of like, are they thinking it's bizarre? And then the people in front of me, I just, they really were not getting the piece at all. And I'm just saying, what does a show like this have in terms of shelf life if the people around them, around us are not getting it?
And maybe this was not a commercial theater. Maybe this should have been a downtown, smaller space kind of a thing.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, you know. I don't know. I don't know if it's going to find its audience. I hope it does. I hope any new work finds its audience, but I don't know. And I will say one more time, I worry about Eden's voice. I just feel like I really want her
me
to
too.
Save. I'm so worried about her voice. I want her to like save it and just like, just go easy at times. It's really, it's hard to do that 8 times a week. I hope she makes it because that's got to really be tough on her vocal cords. And hopefully she's got doctors and vocal therapists and teachers telling her what to hydrate and all that, because it's a tough score. And she is working really hard up there, you know?
So. Yeah, but I do want to applaud it. I'm proud that a new work is taking the risk and being on Broadway. I'll applaud it in that way, in every way, shape or form. But, you know, we're just talking about some things that we would have done differently, right?
And I'm that's why I'm kind of sitting here on the fence, like lukewarm about it. I'm not raving about it, but I'm not hating it. I just think it was fine. And maybe we'll, maybe it'll get better over time.
Yeah.
You know, so. Oh my gosh, we're getting ready to wrap up here. Final thoughts on Lampika on Broadway, Jeff, go.
Again, I think this does have the potential to be a cult musical where people like, will later love it and listen to the soundtrack for a while. You know, it has some great themes in there. I think it highlights her life. Is it the best thing I've ever seen? Definitely not. But, you know, great moments.
And
some beautiful dresses.
Oh my gosh. I really feel like I've seen worse. I've seen better.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is fine. I'm not sitting here raving about it. I think there's some nice parts and there's some wonderful performances, but it's a little inconsistent for me.
Definitely.
And hopefully it grows and tightens and strengthens and it kind of finds its footing a little more and it finds its audience. It'll get Tony nominations. It's an original, wonderful story. It's a story that should be told, but hopefully it tightens up a little bit as it goes. So,
yeah.
Well, that does wrap up our discussion on the episode today. We hope you enjoyed our deep dive into Lampika, and we will share the link with ticket information in our description here as well.
Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Continue the conversation with us on Instagram and TikTok at Half Hour Podcast, and let us know your thoughts on Lampika.
If you enjoyed our show, please leave us a review. Your feedback helps us bring more theater to you. Remember, you can listen to past episodes and stay tuned for upcoming ones as well.
Until next time, I'm Jeff.
And I'm Richie, saying ta-ta for now.
Bye.
Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org, because only together we rise.